You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Did you enjoy that that part of your career?
Definitely. This is, again, back in the beginning of the, before Living Color even got a deal. And I was from like a teenager, like my early teens, I was like an actor, pounding the pavement. I was hitting the bricks, doing auditions for Colgate and mouthwash commercials and shit like that. And also for feature films. And I auditioned for this film, and I got a couple callbacks, and that was fine. And it looks like I didn't get it. And then a friend of mine actually had gotten a gig, and at some point he decided through whatever negotiations he pulled out, and I was the next in line. So they called me, and they called me on a Monday, and I was on a plane on Tuesday night on my way to the Philippines, and I was there for 3 months.
And what film was that?
Platoon.
Wow. So yeah. that was the first. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's Charlie Sheen, Johnny Depp, Forrest Whitaker. Who else was in that movie that went on to do something? This is Sheen, Depp, Willem Dafoe.
That's right. I haven't seen that movie in a minute. So it's a phenomenal film, though. I mean, you said you're there for 3 months. You must be in contact with all these dudes that went on to have these amazing acting careers. Yeah. Did you stay in touch with them?
We tried to stay in touch as much as we possibly can. And I see Depp every now and then. I see Sheen a little less frequently than usual. And all the rest of the guys from the cast, they come to shows. They live all over the country,
That's awesome, man. Going back to when I asked you about the blues and your influences, your earlier influences, you said around where you're growing up, you're listening to some of that Caribbean and reggae music. And I had a couple questions on that, because you got songs from your career going back to like Solace of You, and you mentioned Glamour Boys that definitely have that vibe. Is it safe to say that's where that came from?
Oh, yeah. Vernon and Doug, both parents are from the Caribbean. So there's all that there. And that's, like where we grew up and where we lived, that was part of the thing. Like if you were going to play in a band, you played in the soca band, you played in the calypso band, you played in the reggae band. And so it was always there. So you heard Beanie Man, and you heard Yellow Man, and you heard all those early sort of reggae MCs and that kind of stuff in your life. You know, it's a whole kind of education. You heard everything. You heard soca, calypso. You heard salsa. You heard merengue. You heard everything. Absolutely everything.
Yeah, man. And that brings me to another thing, though. When you're talking about how you guys have a culture from every genre of music and a culture, really. When you're putting all this stuff out, and now you've got your deal, let's fast forward a little bit, and you're starting to, you know, see the fruits of your labor and your passion, and you're starting to tour with Living Color. Did you guys ever make it out to some Caribbean cities and play some shows out there? I mean, like, what were some of the more obscure places outside of the States that this project was able to take you?
Well, we've not yet played in the Caribbean, which is very interesting. Well, I'm sure we will. But you know, our first show outside the United States was at this festival in Switzerland, and it was just like this big giant festival, and there's a lot of 5,000 people out there. It was like just weird and hard to wrap your mind around. But we had a good time, and you know, and you go into these, going all over these places, and we've been to so many places. There's so many places we haven't been. Like, we've never been to Russia. We've never been to Greece. We've never really been. We've never gone up to like Alaska. We've never been to China. We've never been to Hong Kong. There's a bunch of places we'd love to go to and play, because really a lot of our influences are there.
Yeah, that's why it's more surprising. I mean, like, there's a lot of those places I haven't been either. But we've done Alaska one time. That was wild. My now wife is from Alaska. It was no relation. She just happened to be from Alaska. She would live.
Right.
She moved to Huntington, where I'm from, when she was 8 years old, and that's where I met her. And then found out she was from Alaska. So that was neither here nor there. But that was a wild place too. We haven't been able to go back since, and that was like in 2007, 2008, something like that. But yeah, mentioning all those places, and I'm thinking as you're talking, I'm picturing some of this touring life. I mean, you've had a career that spans, you know, 40 years now. You've seen the shifts and the ebbs and flows of the business that is the music industry. What are some of the things that stand out to you today from, you know, all that time and that touring life? I mean, that was a different touring life than we have today. You know, now you got the buses and rolling in differently. How were you guys traveling first back in the day, and how did you see all those shifts?
When we first started, we were in vans. It was Econoline vans, and we were driving ourselves across the country. And then we went to a Winnebago for a hot minute. That was a disaster. and then we got to the buses. But, you know, like, we were on the first Lollapalooza, you know, when it was still a traveling sort of thing, when they were still going from town to town to town.
Oh, I never realized they were doing town to town on that.
Yeah, it was a tour. Lollapalooza was originally started out as a tour. Like, we started out in Arizona and wound up, we came up toward New York, and we went played in Alpine and in the Chicagoland area. We played, you know, it was a touring thing originally, and now it's not. How the festival scene has so drastically changed from what it used to be to what it is now, like the summertime thing. We never played Coachella. We've never played those kind of things. I'd love to play Burning Man personally. Wow. And to see how that culture has sort of become a part of everyday life, that sort of the rise of the jam band scene when I was playing with Galactic and all that, and what's going on with that, and people who follow the Dead and now follow Fish and that kind of stuff. So it's an incredible ride. It's been an incredible ride.
And on the industry side of things, you know, you guys come from a world where, you know, in the 80s and 90s, there was album sales to be had, tape cassettes, and then into the CDs, and now coming full circle, there's a, you know, for the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, has been this resurgence of vinyl being a cool thing for everybody.
Yeah.
Can you speak upon the ebbs and flows of the industry that you've been a part of?
Well, you know, we are also a part of the MTV generation.
Right.
You know?
That's where I discovered you.
Yeah, you know, when having a music video, with music videos, we weren't a part of that, but they were $1 million music videos. I mean, the same kind of budgets they made for feature films, they had for music videos, that kind of thing. To watch, you know, to watch the rise and fall of the record store.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Tower Records, what happened, you know, that whole thing. To watch the mom and pops go out of business too. That was kind of sad. Really, really sad. You know, that, you know, the whole mixtape thing and the rise and fall, rise of DJs and producers and that kind of stuff. We've seen it all. We've seen all of it. You know what I mean? We started out, it was still analog. It was still recording on tape, you know, on analog tape. And now they're going back to it because it still sounds better than anything else you've ever heard. So right. We'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting the way that they're bringing back analog and tying it into digital still, you know, so they don't have to bust out the razor blades. There's only a finite amount of tape. So it's just like you just loop it so you could get that nice tone before you bring it into a Pro Tools or Logic.
You want to wear down the tape so you can hear that some of that tape is that you want that everybody loves to hear on a record. So when you miss it, you go, why didn't this record sound right? And he's like, because it's not on tape.
Right. I'm glad that they're bringing a lot of artists are bringing that in too, because, you know, it brings that warmth that we were talking about before, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, digital has a frequency range that's enormous and immense, but you don't hear a half of that, mm-hmm. you know, and when you close that gap and you make it smaller, it becomes more familiar, it becomes closer to you, it becomes something that you can actually feel as opposed to something that you can sense.
Right. I mean, I agree. I mean, you could equivocate it to the TVs of today. I mean, we got TVs going up to 4K, 8K, 12K. I don't think our eyes can even really see all the spectrum that they're giving us.
That those televisions and all this digital media can do, we don't have the ability to sense it. We have to evolve a couple of thousand more years in order to see some of those spectrums of light.
No kidding, man. I'm glad you brought up a little bit of evolution and evolving a couple thousand years into it. It brings us back to Sonic Universe. I was reading a little bit of some of the ideology behind of it and everything. Like mm-hmm. when you were approaching the lyrics on this album, was you know that. You know, that big bang, those sonic things that space sound, I think was something that was referenced on the one sheet that I got. Is that something you were bringing in lyrically?
This record is a lot more personal, about more my personal life.
Okay.
Than I'm used to doing, than I'm actually even more than I'm comfortable with doing. You know, this is about, you know, the foibles, like of my, you know, of this, the foibles of my failures, you know, and how I have to live through it and how I'm going to absolutely survive through this stuff and how I'm going to live continuously. And that in of itself is a cosmic idea, the live through it, that you know, you can rail against everything. You can be as angry as you want to be, but you're going to have to live through it all either way.
Wow. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's kind of going through like some existential and introspective times in your life, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Real quick, back to the traveling stuff. Did you guys, through the 90s, when you're blowing up with Cult of Personality and Living Color, did you guys ever do the limousine ride and jet flying vibe, or was it...
We never did the private jet thing. There was one time we were playing in England, and we were in England to do press, and they were driving us around in a Bentley. And I was like, this isn't real. We can't do this. We have to, is there a taxi we can take? Because this is ridiculous. You know, you're pulling up to a fast food joint to get something to eat and you step out of a Bentley to like, no, this doesn't make sense. One time we went to a party that Jagger was at. We were there to go hang out with him. And he's like, all right, I'm going to go home. I'm going to drop you all off at your hotel. It's like, okay. And it was like, okay, get ready. Like, all right, what do you mean get ready? So the minute they opened the door, the paparazzi started just swarming him, just on top of him, just taking pictures, asking questions. And they're shuffling all of us to his limousine. But I'm in the back of this crowd of people, and they shuffle the rest of the band and him into the limousine, and then they close the door, and I'm still on the outside. And the car is about to take off. It's like, whoa, Corey's not in the car. So they stopped and let me in. But that was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've been in a couple of situations like that overseas, not in the States, but there's some places like down south in South America. Southeast Asia.
Like, we've had that like in Brazil. Yep. Like when the first time we went to Brazil, and that's funny because we were out there actually with Extreme was out there. We were there for this festival, this Hollywood Rock Festival. And it was like we got off the plane and there were people waiting for us at the airport. Why? Or we play in Argentina and there's like the hotel lobby is swamped with people trying to get a glimpse or something. You know, it was weird. It was a very strange sort.
What year was that? Whereabouts that year that was? I won't hold you to it. The comments will, but I won't hold you to it.
Yeah, it's like in the 90s sometimes, like 93, 94, something like that.
So it was still like that back then too, then, man.
Yeah.
They're still like that today. That's the wild part, man. It's
South America is great. I love South America. I love playing Brazil. Yeah. Brazil audiences are really, really cool. Very, very cool.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to get back to, we talked about your influences going on, and as I said at the top of the show, you know, a pioneer in yourself in Living Color, paving the way for a lot of people that inspired in the rock, metal, funk world that you guys did, including, you know, other artists such as yourself, African-American artists in the rock world like today's LJ from Seven Dust or Howard from Killswitch when he was doing that thing. And then, of course, like guys like Doc Coyle and the rest of the God Forbid guys, definitely influences there. You can, you know, just because you guys look similar, right?
And then going to the metal. I'm actually in a band with Corey. I'm in another band called Disciples of Verity with Corey Pierce.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess my question in that is, like, after all these years, you guys kind of paved the way, at least in a more metal sense. I mean, you guys rock funk, of course, coming onto the scene in the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, there's guys before you, of course. You mentioned Jimi Hendrix before in the rock world and stuff that probably inspired you. But now looking back today, when you see other artists as some of them that I mentioned, what does that mean to you, having gone through that?
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lambgoat's Van Flip Podcast.
Wherever you're listening to this podcast, make sure you're subscribed and leave us a 5-star review. If you want to listen to this show ad-free, head over to drinkswithjohnny.com and become a premium member. You'll get to enjoy unreleased clips from your favorite guests, discounts on merchandise in our shop, and access to our private Discord server where you can chat one-on-one with Johnny Christ himself.
Awesome!
So stay tuned, stay thirsty, and stay filthy as fuck.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe Grind Podcast.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
You know, it's all oftentimes we find ourselves in a place of being sort of like on the outside looking in. And for the first time in a very long time, you know, people have to pay attention to these sort of things. They have to look at who and what we are and understand that where the music comes from is our experience. And my experience living in Brooklyn and hearing all of the music, not just some of the music, and not being relegated to one kind of music, sort of changes my perspective and gives me a very unique perspective that rock still needs, that music still needs, and needs a perspective that's open, that's willing to challenge itself and move through some more difficult things and understand what those difficult things are so they can move forward. And it's, you know, that's been our sort of mantra. That's been the way we've dealt with the world. That's the way we've decided this is how it works, you know. And we are very willing. We're very willing to be a change agent for all of that.
I mean, you definitely have been. I mean that culture from what you guys have created still rings true today. I mean, are you a professional wrestling fan?
I am now. Now that it punks around, yeah. Sure.
Did you grow up watching any of it? I mean, you're in New York. I mean, that was the mecca for the WWF at the time.
Yeah, because they played at Madison Square Garden and they played at the Meadowlands all the time. But it's in the background. I would watch wrestling, but I was really into a bunch of that stuff. And then to find out that this guy who went from backyard to WWE, WWF to back to ACW and then back to WWE, and all, the whole time he never let go of Cult of Personality as his entrance music.
Right.
You know, and the way he tells it was like when he was in Little League in the suburbs of Chicago, that was the team's entrance music was Cult of Personality.
That's,
you know, evidently they had a very progressive coach. He really dug the song, so he kept it his whole career.
Yeah, see, I'm a big wrestling fan. I followed CM Punk. He started using the song, I believe, in like 2011. Probably had it in some indie stuff before, but when everyone started, you know, making Cult of Personality and CM Punk go hand in hand was really in 2011. Mm. And then you pointed out, like, and then he's gone to different organizations and it's followed him. And it's come back again. He recently is now back in the WWE. You got WrestleMania 40 coming up here. Well, while we're recording this episode, it'll have already happened. But I'm a big fan. I'm looking forward to it. And being on both sides, I'm friends with a lot of wrestlers now from doing the podcast, just from being a fan and stuff, and a lot of mutual friends. So I've never had the pleasure of meeting Punk to ask him about it. But from my music side, I'm also wondering, like, What was it like on the business side, like the publishing? Like, what is that? What not you know? No, you go into specific details on it, but how does that come to you when you know it's 2011 and WWE is going to use it for his entrance music, and it's a song that goes back to the early 90s? Like, what is that?
That kind of stuff keeps my children very happy. How about that?
Very cool. Yeah, that's a good answer, man.
How about, you know, they get whatever pair of sneakers they want.
That's cool. But I guess, like, you don't have to go like too much more detail than that. But I mean, like, is it an every time it's played kind of thing, or is there a deal that just kind of spans a contract
with the WWE? I think that they have, they license it for a particular point for a particular time. Like, they license it for, like, we're licensing it for WrestleMania. We're licensing it for Raw for a season. You know, because Punk is going to be like the middle card on every place they play for this season, and you know, there's a fat check for it. You know,
yeah. I mean, and on that though, like they've had at WrestleManias in the past and some of the bigger pay per views, they've definitely had artists who you know, they use their songs for their intros and stuff come out and actually perform them. Has there ever been any talks of that, of having Living Color bring out CM Punk for a big event?
We did. I forget which WrestleMania we did, but we played at Giant Stadium.
Oh shit!
For Punk, yeah.
It feels like something I should have known as a wrestling fan, but I'll admit there was about a decade plus where I wasn't dead focused on it for a little while.
Right. Sometimes I forget too.
Well, that's got to be like really cool though for everybody involved there, man. And then you mentioned though, like real quick, were you aware when it was going to AEW more than when he went there? He had a short stint in AEW recently.
Yeah.
And they obviously went and took the rights for it for a while there too.
They had it for a minute, yeah. And I think once WWF got sold, I think the McMahon sold, once they sold, it was like a huge, ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, they joined with the UFC. I'm drawing a blank on the conglomerate that has a few other companies now.
But. Yeah. It's some ridiculous deal. They called back a bunch of people, everybody, but of course Chris Jericho, because Chris was running AEW.
Right.
But I'm sure he'll be back soon too. We met Chris too. We did his podcast a couple of years back.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good dude.
Yeah. Yeah. But we had a good, you know, they had a, like I said, when back in the day, when Punk was first going to WWF, they were like, okay, so we're going to get you your own entrance music. So like, no, I already have entrance music. Like, he made it a point that I'm not changing my entrance music, because they had their own music division of the WWF, and they were going to have somebody make up a song that sounded similar to Cult's personality, and that's what's going to be his entrance music. No, I don't want that. I want the real thing. Want the real thing. He's like one of the talent that actually got that in his contract, that wherever he goes, that goes with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is incredible. I mean, there's only a handful of guys that have that kind of clout to throw that around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good guy to have in your guys' corner, you know, for your children, for them shoes. That's, you know, shout out to CM Punk for all that, right?
Exactly. You know, car payments are good because of CM Punk, yeah.
last couple of things I want to get to before I let you go. Another fun thing, speaking on Cult of Personality, the song, you actually performed with my drummer, Brooks Wackerman, I don't know if you remember, and Robert Trujillo for the Jacko Pastorius
thing. Yeah, down at the Ace Hotel.
Yes. Who did he say was playing guitar, though? Who played guitar with you guys on that?
It's African dude. I can't think of his name. No, he's a bass player. Who's playing guitar? But Flea was on that gig, and it's a bunch of folks who were on there. Robert was there. Yeah, man, because that was Robert produced that.
Robert produced that thing. It was right when Brooks was joining Avenged Sevenfold, And okay. We were working on the stage, and he invited us out. Robert invited us out because it was in town. I can't remember what we were all doing. We weren't able to make it, and I still to this day regret it because you're saying it right now. Brooks has told me all. I mean, the name is names amongst names, especially for me as a bassist. I was like, how did I fucking miss that night?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was incredible. That night was amazing, absolutely amazing. It was fun.
And how did you feel? Brooks laid it down for you that night.
Brooks is the good boy. Good boy. Got a nice foot. I like his foot.
Yeah. Some people think he's got two, but it's just one.
Yeah. He's got a great that kick drum. His kick drum sound is great. I love that.
Yeah, man. We love having him, man. He's one of those guys like I was talking about before that can show you all the chops and do everything and
right.
And mean he's got to get that feeling groove.
How thin is his snare? Like he's got this really thin snare. What is that?
Dude, I don't even know. He goes through so many different things. Like I can't keep up with his catch changes all the time.
He was playing the thinnest snare I ever saw in my life on that gig.
I'm not sure which one he was using at that gig, but yeah, I mean he's an incredible, just a beast in the drummer, coming from a drumming family and musical family. Yeah. We're very fortunate to have him out with us these days.
Absolutely.
Well, man, before I let you go, we talked a little bit about the influence on the African American culture in the rock and metal world that you guys have brought, and I just saw not too long ago you commented on Lenny Kravitz. In his Vogue interview, talking about how he's never been invited to any BET things, and you mentioned you guys had similar things all through the
It. I mean, it's for a lot of folks, it's a weird sort of situation where you're not black enough for black folks, and you're certainly too black for white folks, so. We've experienced that sort of, that situation more than once throughout our career. And I was just trying to say, we're all going through it. There's a question that to be had about that. There's a conversation that needs to be had, a further conversation that needs to be had. That's more than just a Vogue conversation you have in Vogue magazine. It's like, there's a real sort of sit down between the powers that be. Cause we also had this conversation, when Jan Hammer was trying to write that book and we were like, no, you didn't. And he didn't talk about the history of rock and roll. Didn't talk to any women or people of color or women. And we're like, because he didn't think they were intelligent enough.
Whoa.
And that was, so there's a discussion that with the powers that be, that sort of talk about what's going on out here, what's really happening in the world, and how music sort of is supposed to reflect that, but we can't be reflected if it's not being seen. You know what I mean? So there's a bigger, a much larger conversation to be had about that.
Well, man, when you brought whatever piece you just brought up, I was like, maybe I should know what he's talking about. Now I'm glad, because if he left out all that, if there were that many omissions, I'm glad I have no idea what book you're talking about.
Yeah, there's so much more that needs to be discussed, and so much more that needs to be dealt with to this day. We've gone far, but not far enough, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just surprising to me when I hear stuff like that still, even in this day and age, or even back in the 90s. I mean, it's just it's bizarre to me that, but part of my beliefs of what we're all doing here, we're just like floating out on this one minuscule rock in this giant fucking universe. We wake up into consciousness one day, and there's already all these nature laws in place. And then we start making more of them, like where you can fit, like you got to look this way to be that way or feel this way to be. It's like, why are we adding laws that are already in place? Like, let's just follow nature's laws. There's enough there that we have to fucking deal with.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just,
I agree. I completely agree.
Man. Well, I've taken up enough of your time. I know you got other shit to do. I really appreciate the time, Corey. I hope we can keep in touch and have more conversations on and off camera in the future, man.
Absolutely, Johnny. I'd love to hang out and do some talking.
Absolutely, man. Everybody, go check out the new record from Sonic Universe. It's coming out May 10th. This will probably be this week So everyone go out, stream it, buy it, whatever it is. Go follow Corey Glover, Living Color, Sonic Universe, all those wonderful things. And, of course, hit the subscribe button, all that bullshit that I have to say every time. So thank you, guys.
Bruh, it's good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, good to talk to you, too, man. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time. As always, cheers.
Bye-bye.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.